This is Jody Sweetin.
And this is Andrea Barber from How Rude Tanneritos. The 90s gave us some great things. The music? Totally rad. The fashion? So fly.
But home decor? Not so much. In HGTV's new competition series, Totally 90s House, two teams of iconic TV stars,
including Jody,
including me, take on two homes frozen in time.
Paired with HGTV experts, they'll turn dated spaces into fresh, modern homes and compete for the ultimate bragging rights.
Goodbye, honey oak cabinets. Hello, 21st century style. Totally 90s House. Special series premiere starts August 26th at 9, 8 central on HGTV.
Broadcasting coast to coast and border to border from Memphis, Tennessee.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes Radio Show. Great to have you with us today. And, wow, ladies and gentlemen, what was it? 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, it may have been 3 weeks ago. We had Harry Hurley and Steve Gill on the show, and I decided to throw out a little thought, really a conspiracy theory. I wouldn't, at the time, I guess it was a conspiracy theory. I don't know. I was just, I've been trying to put all the puzzle pieces together, and I sort of, I know you guys, you have full lives. You have things that you do other than just politics, but yours truly, this is what I do. I live and breathe and eat politics and the culture, and we try to stay on top of all of the things that are happening in the world so that every day when you tune in for this three-hour conversation, that you come away with a little bit of knowledge and some understanding and maybe an idea of what's really going on behind the scenes. And I believe I have talked to enough people now to confirm something I shared on air. And really, I posited a theory to Harry Hurley and Steve Gill on this program. And I now believe that theory to be reality. And if you go back into the Todd Starnes Show time machine, here's what I said. I suggested that there was an effort to actually sabotage the midterm elections, that Republicans really were not interested in actually winning the midterm elections. And I think now we've got the evidence we need. So yesterday, the day before that, and I guess we should probably start with Senator John Kennedy, but a lot of this centers on what's happening right now in Texas and also in Georgia. And there may be a Tennessee angle to all of this as well, and I'll get to that. But definitely Texas, and this is a major, major issue. The U.S. Senate race, Ken Paxton, James Talafrico, and a lot of the polling data out there seems to indicate that Talafrico is surging and is somehow connecting with voters. Now, you can believe the polls. You cannot believe the polls. That's up to you. But what we can talk about are the fundraising numbers, and that is something that is concrete, something we can actually look at and we can analyze and say, okay, this is how much money the candidates have. And right now, Talafrico is getting a lot of money, a lot more than Ken Paxton. Now, yesterday, you had Majority Leader John Thune. He was doing Fox News. That's really the only news outlet that Thune will go on because they will not ask him tough questions. They just will not. And that's a conversation for another day, but, you know, that's the reality of it. So John Thune's out there, and he's saying, well, you know, we just don't have any money. We don't have any money to help. We don't have any money at all to help Ken Paxton. And John Thune is now dumping all of this in Trump's lap and saying, Mr. President, you're going to have to, if you want Ken Paxton to win the Senate in Texas, you're going to have to throw in some money here because we got no money. Well, that's a load of I almost had to. Oh, my goodness. That is a load of hooey, ladies and gentlemen. A load of grade A hooey. Because we know that the Senate Republicans spent over $100 million defending John Cornyn in the primary. The primary where one John Cornyn got his buttocks handed to him in a sling. No, not literally, Dylan, but it's like figuratively. It's theater of the mind radio. So they spent $100 million trying to destroy Kim Paxton, and you're telling me now they got no money? They got no money left. That's the argument that they are literally trying to make. As a matter of fact, here is John Kennedy, Senator John Kennedy, cut 27.
It didn't sound from his answer that the president made any commitments, either himself or through his super PAC, to write checks for Paxton, at least right now. Does Senate Leadership Fund or NRSC have any plans for TV ads, you know, to support him? Because he's down in spending there.
Well, I listened to your interview. It was very good, by the way, with the attorney general. Look, there's no sense bubble wrapping it. We've got a race in Texas. And the attorney general is going to have to do two things. He's going to have to point out the deficiencies of Mr. Tallarico. He really is a Lululemon, and he's a little bit of a weenie. But at the same time, Mr. Paxton is going to have to talk about what he's going to do, a positive platform for the United States Senate. You can't win an election by saying the other guy's worse than me. Money is an issue. Mr. Tallarico has been raising bucket loads of money from California, Hollywood, all the beautiful people who partied with Harvey Weinstein. We in the Senate don't have the money budgeted for Texas. We need help from the president. The president says he has $850 million in his campaign accounts. That's a lot of jack. I'm hoping that the president's going to spend $100 or $200 million in Texas, but he hasn't committed to it yet. But in the meantime, we've got a race, and I'm not going to play act and say that we don't.
All right. With the latest interactive polls, this is from Texas. Tallarico leading Ken Paxton 44% to 43%, 12.6% not sure. So the Senate race is up in the air right now. With leaners, Tallarico and Paxton are tied up at 50%. And that information just coming out. Just very, very recently, Greg Abbott doing better at the polls right now than Ken Paxton is. So here is the majority leader, John Thune.
Let's talk a little bit about Texas and the race between James Tallarico and Ken Paxton. I know you supported John Cornyn. The president supported Ken Paxton. One GOP donor in Texas said, "You broke it, you own it," is his attitude towards the White House in terms of getting going on backing that race. What do you think is going to happen there?
I think that I'm hoping the White House will become engaged. Texas is an incredibly expensive state and obviously one that we've got to hold. If we're going to keep the United States Senate, if we're going to keep a majority, Martha, with Texas, that is, we absolutely have to win that race. So everybody's all in for Ken Paxton. The primary is over. We're focused now on the general election. But because Texas is such an expensive state, we're going to need the president and his team to be engaged there and to be putting resources into that race.
All right, so let me give you the numbers. These are cold numbers. So, fine, you don't want to believe the polling data. Let's take a look at what we do know and what we can glean from that. According to Federal Election Commission data, and this is as of August 31st, James Tallarico has raised roughly $72 million compared with $16.8 million from Ken Paxton. Now, when you look at the principal campaign committee money, the disparity is even starker. Tallarico raising $68.6 million through June 30th. Paxton only raising $9.2 million. So Tallarico's got about a little over seven times as much direct campaign money as Ken Paxton has. So that's a problem. That is a huge problem. When you look at and when you go down through, the Democrats are eating the Republicans' lunch right now when it comes to fundraising and getting money for their candidates in Texas. And Ted Cruz is pretty angry about all of this. As a matter of fact, can we play that Ted Cruz audio?
Some of the Republicans that are throwing rocks at Ken Paxton, my message to them is enough. Stop your bitching. We had a $200 million primary and Ken won. And one of the reasons the numbers are close is because $200 million of attack ads were run against him.
Thank
and that
you.
Does damage. You want to complain, complain in the primary. It's over. And by the way, I will say, every moderate Republican, when they win a primary, they tell conservatives, now shut up and support the nominee. My answer to everyone whining, shut up and support the nominee, and don't hand Texas over to a communist lunatic.
Yes, I agree with that. But that's not what's happening here. And I'm going to explain why. There's a nefarious reason behind all of this. Trump is upset about this. He was on with the lieutenant governor. Lieutenant governor owns a radio station in Houston, and they did a podcast interview today. We'll get to more of that. President's really upset. John Cornyn said he is not going to raise money for Ken Paxton. He is not. He said he will support the candidate, meaning I'm assuming he's going to vote for the guy, but that's it. And look, I don't blame John Cornyn. All right. John Cornyn got, he got what he had coming, but I don't blame him for being butthurt. But all these others, there's something else going on, and I'll get to that in just a moment. But John Cornyn is actually raising money for other Senate Republicans, but not Ken Paxton in Texas. And specifically, he's working in New Hampshire, Michigan, and Alaska. We got what Mike Rogers going up against Abdul El Sayed there in that contentious race. Paxton said, Cornyn said, Texas can become a black hole when it comes to campaign cash. That's especially noteworthy because Cornyn still has a substantial fundraising apparatus in Texas. But again, I understand why he doesn't want to help Paxton, because it was ugly. It was really ugly, and it became personal. So I get that part of it. No doubt about that. But ladies and gentlemen, the reason why the Republicans are not helping here in Texas is because they want Ken Paxton to lose. And it has nothing to do with his, divorce or the personal scandals or failings. It has nothing to do with that. They perceive Paxton to be a MAGA candidate, and they want the MAGA candidates to lose so they can come back after the November midterms and say, you see what happened here? We backed the MAGA candidates, and they lost. We will not do that again. So they're trying to set up MAGA for failure so they can be shoved aside and the establishment can come right back in and take back control of the party. That, ladies and gentlemen, is what's really going on here. So if you sense in your community, if you sense in your state that the Republicans just aren't doing a lot, if you have establishment Republicans running your state party, that's probably the reason why. They are willing to lose power to make this point. Now, I'm talking about the Senate more so than the House of Representatives. And Mike Johnson has really turned out to surprise a lot of people, including me. He has done a terrific job of corralling a very, very slim majority in the House of Representatives, and he's done a good job of it. But the latest polling data, this is from the University of Virginia, the latest polling data out of the Center for Politics there, that's Larry Sabato's organization, and it's a far-left organization. He's now suggesting that the Republicans could keep the Senate, but will more than likely lose the House of Representatives. Right now, these are the toss-up races. We'll get to the, I'll share what I can here. We may need to go to a break, but I do want to get your take on this. If you buy into the theory here, the notion that this is all a setup and that establishment Republicans are trying to deep six the midterms, 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. Now, according to Sabato, they think the following races are still categorized as toss-ups. Michigan. They say Abdul El Said just cannot bring himself to completely distance himself from Hassan Piker, and that is great news for Mike Rogers. So right now, Rogers is, in their estimation, Rogers is doing well, but at the end of the day, they think best guess right now, El Said is going to be able to overcome overcome the numbers there. Also, the trade war with Canada could play a factor in the Michigan race. In the state of Maine, they're going with Susan Collins there, so that's a safe seat for Alaska. In Maine, in Alaska, you've got former Congress gal Mary Peltola, who is the Democrat, and she is the favored. She is favored right now over the incumbent Senator Dan Sullivan. And in Ohio, it's looking bad for Republicans there. They're suggesting that Sherrod Brown could end up being the victor there. What's interesting about Sabato, they've got Paxton winning in Texas. So that would be a Republican safe seat again. Looking at Democrats picking up, according to Sabato, Democrats would be picking up Alaska, and that's about it, and possibly Ohio. So anyway, we've got to take a break here and pay some bills. When we come back, your thoughts. How do you feel the Republicans are doing out there, and how do you think this is going to play out? 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show.
Celebrate America's 250th with a powerful movie marathon from Salem News Channel and Salem Now. Watch the films that explore faith, freedom, courage, government power, religious liberty, the American dream, and the founding vision of a nation called to be a shining city upon a hill. Don't miss the America 250 Film Marathon, all weekend on Salem News Channel.
All right. So when you you take a look at some of the polling data out there, just want to run through this, and we'll do this on a weekly basis as we move on to the midterms. Democrats leading the national vote in generic congressional ballots. And this would be, you know, again, asking voters whether they plan to support the Democrat or Republican candidate for Congress. Economist YouGov, Morning Consult, rather, Reuters, Qantas, Emerson, all have Democrats up by between 5 points and 8 points. Real Clear Advantage has Democrats with a 6.4% advantage over Republicans. Nate Silver's Silver Bulletin, almost identical. And, I mean, it's really across the board. So the important takeaway here, Cook's latest ratings have Republicans in serious danger of losing the House, and again, the Senate. Cook identifies six Senate races as toss-ups: Alaska, Iowa, Maine, Michigan, Ohio, and Texas. All right, 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show.
For nearly 3,000 years, Homer's The Iliad has shaped the Western imagination. As one of the foundational works of Western literature, it explores permanent questions about honor, courage, leadership, friendship, justice, and what it means to live a noble life. In one of the epic's defining moments, Achilles returns to battle after the death of his beloved friend Patroclus, setting aside his wounded pride to confront the responsibilities that come with greatness. His decision reveals one of the central themes of the Iliad, that true greatness requires more than strength. It demands character, sacrifice, and the pursuit of what is right. That's why Hillsdale College has released its newest free online course, The Iliad. Taught by Professor Stephen Smith, the course reveals why Homer's masterpiece remains one of the greatest works of Western literature. Hillsdale.edu/start now. Read the classics. Study the West. Hillsdale.edu/start now.
And welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns radio program. Great to have you with us today, wherever you might be listening across the fruited plain. Want to give a big shout out to our friends over at WSJS. That's in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And of course, they also have signals in Greensboro and High Point. By the way, High Point, isn't that the, Dylan, that's the school, the basketball school.
Oh, yeah, the one that went on a Cinderella run.
The Cinderella run, yeah. And they paid for the entire student body to go out there or something. Yeah, they flew them all out there. That was impressive.
Cool story.
Anyway, WSJS, want to say hello to our good friend Stu Epperson, Michael Carbone out there, and they just do great, great work. We got, Dylan, a little bit of praise in one of the publications out there.
Very nice.
GreensboroSports.com, baby. The writer said, time for the full disclosure. I hear all the WSJS radio promos each day, but to be, again, totally transparent, I only listen between 12 noon and 2 p.m. I enjoy the Todd Stearns Show on WSJS. I like this guy. To me, without a doubt, one of their very best shows. Lots of conservative political talk and the callers. It is the callers and the fact that the host, Todd Stearns, takes those phone calls that makes this show go and glow. You know, I've never had our show described like that.
Yeah, what does that mean, to glow?
Glow, I don't know.
Like we're vibrant, we're bright.
We're fabulous. No, I don't think it's that.
That's one way to take it.
We're
we're glowing.
Exactly, that's it.
That's typically a compliment.
He's not finished. He has more. I mean, this is a nice piece here. He goes on to say, you can learn a lot about the current political state of our nation by listening to this Todd Stearns Show. And I have always loved shows that ask for and then take the callers. I love how he capitalizes the callers. Like it's that because they are a part of the show. It's like the cast of characters.
Oh, yeah.
We have Joe from LJ. Todd! That's my Joe impression. Todd!
He's the best.
Let me continue. You get to hear other opinions and leanings from a direction other than the show host. This is the show for me on WSJS. Well, thank you very much. We're going to find out who wrote that. Let's see here. Scrolling up. I should see who wrote this, but I can't see who wrote this. Andy Durham. Thank you very much, Andy Durham. All right, there we go.
The crowd goes crazy.
It's the callers. They're just sitting in the
background.
We have
them all here.
Yeah, we round them up every day. We put them in kind of like jury duty.
They get paid to call in and be here.
Now on deck, Charles from WSIC. Up next, Miss Janice from New Orleans.
I think she's so mad at us because we're big pro-Trumpers here on the pro. That's okay. We love Miss Janice. But in all honesty, there are a lot of hosts out there that just do not like callers, and they don't take the calls, And we're not one of those shows. We love hearing from you guys. And again, we describe it thusly as if it is a great big front porch. That's what this radio station is. A radio show is. Oh, by the way, I've got to read this text from Mary Walter. And I forgot to bring this up yesterday when she was on the show. Mary sent me a note, and I don't know why we missed this, but we should, and if it wasn't like spur of the moment, we would have her on. Next week, we have to ask her about this. So, Helen, remind me that we've got to talk to Mary Walter about this. Mary's from New Jersey, and you need to understand that. So she's a northerner, and she's a Jersey girl. She says, Todd, we made our maiden voyage to Cracker Barrel.
Whoa. Like for the first time.
First time ever.
This is huge for Mary.
She goes on. It was fine. And I'm like, uh-oh. It was fine, but we don't get the gravy thing at all. We sideline the gravy. It's like Jell-O and doesn't have any taste. The biscuits were much better with just butter. So I guess what they ordered, biscuits and gravy.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
So here's, wow, I feel bad about saying this. Cracker Barrel is just not that good. It's not like it used to be, like years ago.
Yeah.
And so I get the gravy thing. Their gravy is weird and it doesn't taste good.
Yeah. But they used to. Like, that's the thing.
But it used to.
What we remember is that nostalgic home cooking, like, taste mm-hmm. of gravy. I don't know what it is now.
Jell-O. I know exactly.
It might be Jell-O.
I can imagine it. Yep, I'm sure it jiggled as it was plopped down on the table.
It's not supposed to jiggle.
No.
It's supposed to, like, drip down like a volcano almost.
Yeah, well, exactly. And it's got to have big chunks of, like, I mean, if you're going to do sausage gravy,
yep.
I am not a big biscuits and gravy kind of a person, but you've got to have some good, you got to have flavor. You got to put a couple of dashes of the Worcestershire sauce in there to give yep. it the tang, some hot sauce. And plenty of salt and pepper.
Cracker Barrel could take a few notes here.
And grab some. I'm just telling you, you've got your choices here. Tennessee, you got Tennessee Pride, Ernie Pride. You got that sausage. But you got to have the hot sausage or William sausage, which is my go-to sausage.
Yep.
And make sure you get some good chunks. You don't want to have the crumble. You want to have good chunks of sausage in your sausage gravy. So I understand why, Mary. I haven't even...
Yeah, I don't even know what that I would have told her to order. I mean, that's probably it. I mean,
it's
I don't know what else there is.
I know. So what I want to do is when she comes to Memphis, because she and the husband are coming down here, I think. So we're going to have to figure out where do we want to take them for a good country cooking meal in Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah, there's a lot of places.
I'm thinking Fat Larry's as a possibility.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. So, Mary, we're going to talk about this. We're going to walk you through. We got to get Mary some good country cooking, and we'll figure it out. I may just have them all over, and I'll fix country fried steak, and I'll do the whole Southern meal. That may be possibly the answer here. All right. Again, thank you so much, Greensboro Sports, for those kind words. And I want to say thank you to WSJS for carrying the show. And also for all of you great listeners out there in North Carolina, we love you guys. And we really do appreciate you guys listening to the program. All right. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Newsmax. It is true. Millions of Americans agree with President Trump. And they're switching to Newsmax. They're watching great shows with Greta, Carl Higbee, Rob Schmidt, Finnerty. So if you're tired of big media, start watching Newsmax. It is free to start. Go to NewsmaxPlus.com for immediate access. Get all of President Trump's most important events live. Imagine, by the way, the documentaries, Mike Huckabee's Israel special, Charlie Kirk, the movie Jesus of Nazareth. Once you start Newsmax Plus, you're not going to stop. Try it for free. Go to NewsmaxPlus.com, then download the app. That's NewsmaxPlus.com. All right, let's go back to the phones. Say hello to Robin, listening to us in Indiana today. Hi, Robin. What's on your mind?
Long time no talk. My last time I talked to you was in 2023.
Wow, it's been a while.
Yeah, I had a couple comments. One of them is when you're talking about the polls, You know, in Indiana, I think a lot of other people in the electorate in the states have to do what we did. We were kind of told by the establishment Republicans, you're not going to be able to do this. So we just primaried them and got rid of all but one.
Oh, is that so? And that worked out for you guys?
Well, yeah. I mean, Senator Banks came down here and worked. And then we've got some TPUSA folks down here working and, you know, door knocking and ballot harvesting, things that we weren't really doing down in Indiana until Donald Trump got reelected and we've seen the direction it was going. What I think is happening is, I don't have to think it, they're proving it. The Republicans are proving that they don't give a daggone what we have to say. The people who voted to put them in, they want the power. They're not going along the lines of, you go to Washington to represent our needs, and they don't listen to us. They tell us, you're not important. So we're going to have to go out there and we'll put people in there that are going to do what we ask them to do.
Yeah, I'm with you, Robin, and I think that's ultimately how we're going to have to operate here. And look, I think at the end of the day, I mean, a state like Indiana, you guys are pretty safe. But at the end of the day, if these Republicans are not doing what we tell them to do, we've got to replace them. I mean, it really is that simple.
Right. And then the last thing, I made my husband biscuits and gravy this morning, homemade. And Cracker Barrel ain't got nothing on me. I throw a little bit of bacon grease in there with that sausage, and you get a delicious biscuits and gravy.
Let me ask you this, Robin. Now, are you old school? Do you have your bacon drippings like in an old coffee can, you know, on the counter? Or do you do that? I think there's some.
I got a little crock, and whenever I fry bacon, I put the bacon drippings in the crock, and it's got, you know, the old-fashioned hinge on it, and then you... I set it in the refrigerator. I don't like to leave it I don't want it to get rancid on the counter.
Yeah, well, that's wise. That's smart. That is smart. All right, Robin, you got to have me over for biscuits and gravy now.
You got it. Hey, thanks for coming to Jack Hibbs Church, too. That's my pastor via online, and it was great seeing you that Wednesday night.
We had so much fun there. It was such great, great people, and wow, thank you for that. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, well, thank you for that, too.
All right, Robin. God bless. Enjoy those biscuits and gravy. My goodness. 901-260-5926, our number. Dylan, we got an email from Janet, and Janet was asking a question about the podcast. I just think this was funny, and we answered. We got her fixed up with the podcast. She says, Todd, I usually download your podcast to listen to when I milk my cow at night.
Oh, okay.
And then she went on to explain what the problem was, and it was, you know, we were able to get it fixed out. But anyway, I never knew. But you know what? What are you going to do? Our guy from Pesci's, the Italian deli in Memphis,
yes.
He actually listened. He can't listen to the show live because they are like running and gunning down there with the meatball subs. But he tells me I make the meatballs while I listen to you your podcast at night.
Very inspirational.
I am honored.
Yeah.
Honored. All right, we've got to take a break. 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show.
This is Jenny Garth from 90210 OMG. HGTV is bringing back the 90s in a big way with Totally 90s House, a brand new renovation competition series that reunites some of your favorite television stars from the era for a showdown unlike anything you've seen before. Let's be honest, the 90s gave us some great things. The music, totally rad. The fashion, so fly. But the home design choices, well, that's a different story. Hosted by Jaleel White, this throwback competition sends two teams of your favorite 90s TV stars across America in search of homes frozen in time. Their mission? Find the two most dated houses they can and transform them into modern dream homes. Jody Sweetin, Beverly Mitchell, Brian Austin Green team up against Matthew and Joey Lawrence, Melissa Joan Hart, and Keisha Knight Pulliam. Paired with HGTV mentors, they'll transform those outdated spaces into fresh, modern homes while keeping just the right amount of dope, nostalgic charm. Goodbye, honey oak cabinets, sponge painted walls, and glass blocks. Hello, 21st century dream homes. Totally 90s House Special Series premiere starts August 26th at 9, 8 Central on HGTV.
All right, let's see if we can work in some calls here. Josh in North Carolina, listening to us on WSJS. Hi, Josh. What's on your mind today?
Well, first of all, I just jumped in the car about 15 minutes ago, and I actually appreciate you bringing up WSJS in North Carolina. I live in Winston-Salem. I thank you for that. I call in periodically to brag about my son because he will not do it. I mean, to him, it's just a job, but he is a career Marine. And he's a crew chief on the largest helicopter in the world. And he has, he's actually the youngest staff sergeant in North Carolina and has the three highest medals in a non-combat situation and two commendations from commanders. You signed a book for him about a year ago. I believe it was Stars and Stripes. Well, first off, I'm sorry, I skipped something. In the hangar, they play music, they play talk radio. Everybody kind of has a chance to do it. Well, I've turned him on to you, and whenever it's his turn, he turns on Todd Starnes.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, when they went overseas, he took that signed copy that you gave him. He gave it to a Democrat, and after he read the book, when he came home, he switched to Republican.
Is that right? So we converted. So he's like an evangelist for the show.
Yeah, basically.
Wow. I love this. This is a great story.
Yeah, he actually turned a no-joke Democrat into a Republican after reading the book and listening to the show and talking about the things that you talk about.
Well, Josh, we're only able to do that. And you tell your son I said this. We're only able to do that because of people like your son who's out there standing guard, fighting for our freedom, putting his life on the line for all of the rest of us. And I know on this radio program, we proudly stand alongside our fighting men and women, and we just say, God bless them. Josh, thank you so much for calling in, and what a great encouragement that is. We're like, wow. We're changing hearts and minds here.
This is not the first time that's happened. We've converted several people.
With the Marines. The Marines. I love it. I love it. Let's go to Germantown, Tennessee. Murph, listening to us on KWAM. Hey, Professor Murph.
How are you, Dr. Starnes? Good to hear from you. Got a couple of observations.
Yeah, go for it.
This group that's in downtown Memphis, this boycott, that's fussing and moaning about the National Guard in town and the task force. Now, correct this if it's wrong. They recovered stolen weapons, recovered kidnapped children, and arrested illegally entering the country immigrants. And they're supposed to be the bad guys? Second observation, the state of Massachusetts just reelected a man, he's the United States Senate, that's been in the Senate for 40 to 50 plus years. We're $40 trillion in debt. A newborn today is $370,000 plus in debt, and it hasn't even gotten out of the crib. Was Pogo right when he said we have found the enemy and it is us?
Yeah, that's deep right there, Murph. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I want to circle back if we can, because a lot of folks may not know what you're talking about with the boycott. We've got more than 50 businesses in the Memphis area, and they're refusing to serve any member of the Memphis Safe Task Force, federal law enforcement, local law enforcement. They're not welcome in their businesses. A lot of this stems from the fact that ICE raided a Mexican nightclub. More than 120 illegals were arrested. And some of the things that, I mean, we're talking about very bad people here. Some of the illegals had criminal histories with larceny, drug possession, domestic violence, prostitution, child endangerment, and driving while intoxicated. And Murph, to your point, these liberal businesses are standing alongside these people. Unbelievable. Professor Murph, I got to leave it there. We've got to take a break for the top of the hour news, but thank you for calling in. Unbelievable. All right, hang tight, everybody. We're going to be talking to the senior pastor at Coral Ridge Presbyterian Church coming up next.
Memphis, Tennessee. It's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
Texas, that's right. I love this American ride.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes Radio Show, border to border, coast to coast, across the fruited plain. Great to have you with us today. We have a lot going on this hour of the program. We are monitoring the Lindsey Clancy trial. We're going to keep you updated on any developments there. Also, the Charlie Kirk murder trial underway and some pretty awful things happening there. We'll tell you all about that a little bit later as well. 901-260-5926. That is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. By the way, we had a terrific interview this morning on Newsmax, one of the early shows, promoting my new book, The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. And the book is doing incredibly well, hit Amazon's bestseller list, and we're pretty excited about that. I mean, we're, 2 weeks out now, and we're just excited to hear the great stories of people reading the book. And not only being encouraged and inspired, but also being able to laugh, because there is a lot of laughter in this book. And I want to encourage you to get a copy of The Golden Age. Grab one for your church library as well, or your pastor. You can get a copy at your favorite bookstore, Barnes & Noble. All the Barnes & Nobles in America have copies in their stores. And, of course, you'll be able to order it on Amazon as well. So we really appreciate the thousands of you who have already purchased copies of The Golden Age. And of course, thank you to President Trump for endorsing the book, as well as Speaker of the House Mike Johnson. Well, one of the themes in The Golden Age is the rise of socialism and the danger that poses to the Republic. And I'm excited to talk to our next guest about that. He is the senior pastor at the great historic Coral Ridge Presbyterian Church, also the founder of the Institute for Faith and Culture. Our good friend, Dr. Rob Pasadena. Dr. Rob, good to have you with us.
Thank you so much.
You know, Dr. Rob, you have been covering this for a while and watching the rise of socialism, the rise of these Democratic socialist-backed candidates. And, of course, we've got Hassan Piker. Where do you want to start?
Well, it's amazing because what we're seeing now is unprecedented. I think we used to talk about communism and socialism as bad economic systems. We've talked about kind of the moral bankruptcy that they leave behind. But we're really seeing this unprecedented wave and movement of capturing the minds and the hearts of the next generation. And you're seeing new influencers on social media and using all of their means and methods and innovative tools in order to really indoctrinate, no longer inform, but indoctrinate the next generation to really buy into these socialist ideas that are rooted in Marxism, which is absolutely demonic and evil.
Dr. Rob Pasadena joining us on our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line today. when you look at the social media influencers, how influential are people like Hassan Piker in shaping the attitudes and the viewpoints of young voters?
Well, clearly he's very influential, and he's not talking about these systems and these ideas simply in technical terms. He's using real life examples, and he's appealing to the anger that exists and maybe the skepticism that exists in the next generation when it comes to justice, when it comes to equity, when it comes to what the previous generations and their opinions have kind of left behind and left them in a quote unquote disenfranchised state. And so he's really tugging at their heartstrings and using these real life examples and using buzzwords that the next generation is really taking a liking to, and words, to be honest with you, that really have been hijacked from Christianity and from our Judeo-Christian heritage as a nation. I'm all about justice. I'm all about treating people with dignity and respect. But I believe that I'm compelled by the Spirit of the living God. I'm compelled by the love of Christ, and not mandated by the state as these evil and chaotic systems like socialism and communism have been attempting to do for centuries here throughout the world.
Why do you think it is that socialism is gaining traction in Gen Z?
Well, I think people are looking ever really. I mean, you look at going back to 2020, and we had the riots, we had the COVID pandemic, which obviously is being revealed to be an incredible fraud. We're seeing the cries for justice, and we saw people trying to attack law enforcement and try to claim that our nation is systemically racist. And so I think this is unfortunately the fatal fruits of critical race theory, Black Lives Matters, and people crying out for justice. The problem is they're finding it in all the wrong places. You don't achieve justice in a society by putting down one group of people and manufacturing the elevation of another group of people. You certainly don't do it through the redistribution of wealth. But I think the next generation is crying for justice. They're crying for equity. They have bought the lie that America is an evil nation and systemically racist. So, of course, Marxism, communism, and socialism is going to speak to a next generation that's looking for a movement, looking for new voices. They're disenfranchised with the old political systems, but that's precisely the problem. We're not just talking about a new political system. We're talking about a radical evil ideology. This is really a battle of worldviews. It's not a battle of political systems. And I think that's what we need to be communicating to the next generation. This is an ideology that has wreaked havoc across societies over the last centuries, resulting in hundreds of millions of deaths because Marxism itself was rooted in a satanic, demonic ideology.
Does it concern you, though, that I actually wrote about this in the Golden Age, that the kids aren't learning this at home. They're learning this in their school system. And the problem I have now is the schools are clearly, they have an agenda, and they're promoting socialism as opposed to explaining what you just did, that socialism never works. And it has, in fact, caused great death and agony and destruction across the world. Kids aren't getting that part of the story.
Of course not, because we made a decision years ago to replace civics with social studies. So no longer are they learning the foundations of a free and flourishing society. No longer are they learning the factual truths that made America great in the first place 250 years ago. Now they're learning what it means to be a globalist, what it means to reject your heritage and your tradition, to call out your founders for being racist, and to embrace a pagan globalist mindset that they're being learned, that is being taught in public school systems. As I said earlier, no longer are children being educated and informed. They're being indoctrinated from elementary schools where they're learning about radical gender madness in kindergarten and first grade, all the way through the institutions of higher education, where they're being led by certain institutions that have board members, deans, and faculty that are card-carrying socialists here in America that are training the next generation to be Marxist, to be anti-Semitic, and to fundamentally hate America.
Dr. Rob Pacienza joining us on our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line, senior pastor of Coral Ridge Presbyterian Church and also the founder of the Institute for Faith and Culture. When you look at the church, first of all, I'm wondering, does the church have a responsibility here to speak truth to the culture? And if so, how do you do that?
Absolutely, as a responsibility. When you look at the church in colonial America, it's not an opinion. It is absolutely factual to say that if it was not for the pulpit speaking truth to power, preaching the whole counsel of God and applying it to our cultural moment, we would not have experienced the unprecedented freedom that we've experienced the last 250 years. Before there was a revolution, before there was a Declaration of Independence, there was a great awakening in this nation. Mm. It was bold biblical preaching that, as I said, was preaching the whole counsel of God and applying it to our culture. But that's not just the story of America. That's the story of civilization over the last 2,000 years. As our good friend Oz Guinness often says, the Western civilization would be unrecognizable if it wasn't for the influence of Christianity. There's no other explanation for how the world could have been turned upside down through a crucified, executed Messiah if it wasn't for the pervasive influence of, first, the reality that Jesus is no longer dead but alive, but then that message of resurrection spread throughout the known world, that not only people could be transformed physically and spiritually, but that the whole cosmic order would be restored and renewed through the message of Christianity. So we are obligated as Christians, pastors, churches, to preach that whole counsel of God, to help their people, to help the people in their congregation apply it to their everyday life. Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 4, that we are called to destroy strongholds with divine power. That is the word of God. So we are to take the word of God, expose the lies of our culture, and present to the world that there is a better way, the truth of Christianity lived under a life, under the surrender to the lordship of Jesus Christ.
You know, I'm wondering about Gen Z and these kids. You know, they've really been through a lot. You've got the China virus, the assassination of Charlie Kirk, a lot of turmoil during the Biden administration years, and I think when kids hear conservatives talking, you know, and the kids, for example, complaining about affordability, which is an issue for their generation, and the response is, well, get a job or get a second or third job. I'm not sure if we have displayed compassion that needs to be displayed here to these young people, and I'm wondering if we're really missing the mark.
You're absolutely right. As I said earlier, the left has really hijacked some of the truths and some of the beautiful words that came out of Christianity and a Judeo-Christian worldview. Issues like compassion and justice and care and taking people in with a hospitable spirit. This comes from the Judeo-Christian worldview. This comes straight from the Bible. So absolutely, Todd, we need to expose the lies of our culture, but we need to show the next generation of the truth, goodness, and beauty of the Christian worldview and of the message of Christianity, that it should be the church that's opening their arms to the poor and to the stranger. It should be the church and to the Christian that is fighting for justice, not a state-mandated social justice movement that's rooted in Marxism, but the message of Christianity that has always led to freedom and flourishing for all people. We need to teach the next generation that wherever Christianity has been embraced throughout civilization, those societies have flourished and flourished for all people, not just for Christians. But wherever Christianity has been oppressed or rejected, those societies have floundered, and there's not human flourishing for all people. So we need to teach the next generation that Christianity is not irrelevant, it's not oppressive, but it is the greatest force of common good in the history of the world. We need to show them lessons from history and show them yet again today how in the 21st century, Christianity is the ultimate answer and the best answer for the injustice and the problems that we're facing in society today.
All right, well said. And what a great place to wrap this conversation up. Dr. Rob Pacienza, senior pastor at Coral Ridge Presbyterian Church, the founder of the Institute for Faith and Culture, the website address, and we'll have this on our social media feeds, institutefc.org. That's institutefc.org. Dr. Rob, good to see you, my friend. Thank you for the great word today.
Thank you, Todd.
All right, there you have it. I mean, it really is that simple, but we are going to have to be intentional about reaching out to Gen Z and tackling this clear and present danger to the Republic. And I lay this out in the Golden Age, that if we do not stop and deal with this, we could end up losing the Republic. I mean, that's how grave of a situation it is. All right, we've got to take a break here, 901-260-5926. We'll take your calls on what Dr. Rob had to say. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right. I like Dr. Rob Pacienza. He's a good guy. Remember, Coral Ridge Presbyterian played such an important role in the conservative movement back in the days after Jimmy Carter and D. James Kennedy was the great pastor there and just a great voice and spoke a lot of truth to the culture. By the way, Dylan, we should probably go through the mailbag. So many people are leaving book reviews now on Amazon, and thank you for that. And we want to encourage you to do it. Here's what TP1 wrote, not to be confused with TP2, but TP1, 5 stars, excellent book. This is an excellent read, shows how important it is to have someone like Donald Trump at the helm at a time like this. Lisa writing in, best book I read all summer. It's a great book. Loved it. Todd Stearns delivers again. God bless America. And God try to heal the TDS children. Well said, Lisa. Pink Eye. Oh, gosh. Pink Eye says an excellent read. Catherine writing in and says, this is a great, easy read. The book is very enlightening. Pastor Jack Hibbs recommended this book, and I've enjoyed it immensely. Lefty says, Lefty got carried away. I'm not going to read everything, Lefty said. But crushing the British crown is still an American civil duty. So he's still fighting the Revolutionary War, Lefty is. All right. Lefty says, what happened to the British Navy? In a word, gone the way of questionable dentistry, me tinkles. Read this book, America, for clarity of the times. Nuff said. God bless America. Let American freedom reign, baby. Great book. All right, a great word there, Lefty. Tracy says, please don't listen to the people with TDS who leave hate-filled reviews. They haven't even read the book, only trying to bring the ratings down. Buy the book, read it, leave an honest review based on quality, even if you don't agree. No person will like any book that is positive and about someone whose political beliefs are not theirs. Why buy it when you know you won't like it before one word is read? Tracy, did you like the book? I just throw that out.
That's a very objective answer there.
I know. And Plumber Man says, this is a great book. The truth is the truth, and no matter what a person feels about another person, if the information presented is based on facts, then it stands. Socialists won't like it, but they really don't like much of anything that is good, wholesome, true, and godly. Oh, well, good job, Mr. President, and good job, Todd Stearns. Well, thank you, Plumber Man. I appreciate that. And thank all of you who've left book reviews. Well, we're going to read some of those once a week. We'll go through and read Only the nice ones. No, we'll read all of them. We'll read even the one-star reviews. But you got to head over to Amazon, leave a book review, and give us a ranking there. We would greatly appreciate your help. All right, hang tight, everybody. Our good buddy Jeffrey Lord coming up next, contributing editor for the American Spectator. You know, there are some days I wish we were broadcasting the show from Gainesville, Georgia, at the beautiful and world-famous Longstreet Cafe, and not just because they have great biscuits and iced tea. But they've got a lot of opinions over there. They have a table. I can't remember. There's a table there in the restaurant where a bunch of the old timers sit around. And I don't know there's a name for the table. Somebody from WDN will call and help us out with that. But anyway, the reason why, and there are a lot of opinions, so there's no shortages of opinion. Anyway, this woman you're about to hear, her name is Delay Lohman. She's a member of the DeKalb County Board of Elections. And she is outraged over all of you folk who recite the Pledge of Allegiance. Now, this is a woman who is a person of responsibility overseeing the elections there in DeKalb County, which is a part of the Metro Atlanta area. Take a listen.
Reciting the Pledge of Allegiance is not unifying, and requesting it is offensive. I will not support it, and I hope that it does not get brought up again until we can be assured that this country has pledged allegiance to all of its citizens and treats all of us as Americans, which it does not and never has. That's it. So when we have multiple people making complaints about reciting the Pledge of Allegiance, it feels like we have lost the plot. Regarding the claim that this is somehow unifying, I just want to remind you that our legislature convened in a special session this summer to take voting representation away from Black people.
Okay, that's simply not true. That is a lie. I want to meet these people who take offense at the Pledge of Allegiance. Dollars to donuts, most of them came here from somewhere else, and I'll say this, they need to go right back to where they came from. But as far as this woman, Ms. Lohman, a member of the DeKalb County Board of Elections, who is offended every time the Pledge of Allegiance is recited, pucker up, baby. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Up yours, ma'am. All right, I feel better now. Let's go to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. Our good friend, Jeffrey Lord, contributing an editor at the American Spectator. Jeffrey, I'm in a mood today.
I think you are. You know, I have to say, I think I learned the Pledge of Allegiance in the second grade. You know, it was taught to us. It was seen as vastly normal.
Yeah, I've never heard of such nonsense before, and it aggravates me that we've got people who just hate our country, and, you know, they don't love our country, and now these people are being elected to offices and places of position. And I'm telling you, the rise of democratic socialism in America, Jeffrey, I hope people understand how dangerous that could eventually become for us.
Yeah, I think that's true. We take a lot of things for granted here. And one of them, alas, is that everybody in the country has an education of some sort. And I'm not talking about a PhD from Harvard. I'm talking about a basic elementary school education where you learn, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic, and you also understand what it means to salute the flag, say the Pledge of Allegiance. When I was a kid, by the time I reached junior high school, we had I played cornet. You'll be amused at this. And was in the junior high school band. And they gave us red blazers and gray slacks or skirts to march with. And we learned to salute the flag and everything else. So wow, this has been around for a very long time, and it long predates us.
Yeah, you know, the radio station I own here in Memphis, KWAM News Radio, every day at noon, we have great musicians here. We're a great music town. And we've got one of the a cappella student groups, and they perform the national anthem. We don't do the top of the hour news at noon. We do the national anthem. And then every morning in the morning show, we have students that come on, and they recite the Pledge of Allegiance for the entire city. I just think that's an important thing for us to do, you know, to as we raise up these next generation patriots.
Well, you know, doing the Pledge of Allegiance is something I've done countless times in my life. As to singing the national anthem, I can say with assurance that there is a reason I never became the fifth Beatle. However, I'd start to sing and everybody would look at me and say, oh, please.
Wow. Jeffrey, I want to move on here because we got a lot of ground to cover. Look, all the polls that are out there, we kind of went through all the major polls. Everybody's got Democrats, taking the midterm elections. In Texas right now, there's a big battle over the Senate, whether or not, well, first of all, Thune says they got no money to help Ken Paxton out, and he says Trump's going to have to step in. I just did a quick search in Georgia and North Carolina, the Senate races there, where Democrats are out fundraising the Republicans. John Ossoff in Georgia, $77 million. You've got Mike Collins at $7 million. North Carolina, Roy Cooper, $34.9 million to Michael Watley's $11.2 million. What's going on out there? You've covered politics a long time. What's going on?
Yeah, well, I've been through these midterm elections many times. In 1986, when I was one of the Reagan White House political directors, my job was basically to run around America and sort of lay the groundwork for a presidential visit where President Reagan would come in and campaign for candidate A, B, C, or D. It only had sort of marginal success. I mean, one of the things that happens is the president of the moment is always at issue. And the president of the moment is not on the ballot, but he is on the ballot, if you get my drift here. And so if there are people out there, in this case, in our situation right now, Democrats who can't abide President Trump, they're all pumped up and ready to go. People on our side have to get their act together and be ready to show up and do the deed. You know, just last night, I was at a local meeting here of our county Republican women. And I can tell you, they're pretty pumped up. They're ready to go. They've got plans for, you know, door knocking, all the basics that you've got to do. That's what has to be done here as we move into this. And the other thing, you just have no idea what's out there beyond your control. The one example that I always fall back on, and I was a kid, just studying politics in the day in Massachusetts. But in the day, it looked like President Kennedy was going to be, and Democrats were going to take a fairly big loss in the 1962 midterm elections. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, Nikita Khrushchev and the Russians decided it would be a good idea to ship nuclear weapons into Cuba. Thus was born, as it was called, the Cuban Missile Crisis. And suddenly the whole world was on tenterhooks. Were we going to have a nuclear war, et cetera? And predictably, the country rallied to JFK, and Democrats did pretty well when it came time to vote, because people were literally scared to death that we were going to have a nuclear war. So my point is, here we are just at the very beginning of September. We have no idea what's going to happen for this month or October and the few days in November. Anything could happen, and we need to be ready for that.
No, I think you're right about that. And again, it's, you know, it frustrates me because I see that this should be an easy, honestly, I know traditionally Democrats, you know, the party out of power usually has gains in these midterms. But I really feel like this could be and should be different based solely on the fact the Democrats are slap crazy nuts right now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think they have, I mean, it is remarkable to me, having been around the block a bit, to see them just go off the rails with the whole socialism nonsense and all of this kind of thing. And, you know, I'm always particularly amused that they think that campaigning on socialism in Florida is going to help them when you've got all these people who are in Florida in the first place because they escaped the socialism in Cuba. I mean, just you know, hello, just doesn't make too much sense here. But we have a ways to go. And my point is anything can happen here between now and it's time to vote.
So it's not time to pull the fire alarm just yet.
No, no. I mean, I think if we get to the middle of October and we're finding problems, yeah, that's when you need to be really, really concerned. But we're not there yet. We'll get there, but we're not there.
I want to play this Ted Cruz, and he did not mince much words here. He's upset over, and we, I think, look, I said this early on in the show. I do think that the establishment want, in the back of their hearts, they want Talafrico to win, only to put the MAGA crowd in their place. And I think yes, a lot of them are just very upset that Kim Paxton beat John Cornyn. Here's Ted Cruz. Take a listen. I want to get your reaction.
Some of the Republicans that are throwing rocks at Ken Paxton, my message to them is enough. Stop your bitching. We had a $200 million primary and Ken won. And one of the reasons the numbers are close is because $200 million of attack ads were run against him.
Thank you.
Does damage. You want to complain in the primary. It's over. And by the way, I will say, every moderate Republican, when they win a primary, they tell conservatives, now shut up and support the nominee. My answer to everyone whining, shut up and support the nominee, and don't hand Texas over to a communist lunatic.
What do you think about that, Jeffrey Lord?
Well, I always like the fact that Ted Cruz is so soft-spoken, and it's always difficult to understand what he means. He is. I've met him a few times and had a little time with him, and I think he's terrific. I think he is an A-plus senator for Texas and a real asset, and he's in his position there to help the Texas Republican Party and to keep that Senate seat, to have that Senate seat in the Republican column here. But even Ted Cruz can have difficulty on occasion.
That's true. It's a fair point. Just curious, the big midterm rally coming up next week in, Dallas. This is something new. Do you see that making an impact one way or the other?
Well, it could. I mean, since it's never been done before, it could well have some sort of an impact. I mean, we've all been to a Republican convention and national convention, and they're quite the, you know, in our era, they're not only substance, they're show business. And so I'll be looking forward to seeing what is on the docket for a midterm convention, because I think there will be, there probably are right this minute, people behind the scenes who are planning the show business aspect of all of this. You know, that, I have to laugh, that began to take effect when Ronald Reagan arrived on the scene. And there was no accident. You know, he was an actor. He understood show business. He understood that you have, that presentation is part of the deal in the television era. And there was some moaning and groaning in the day by professional politicians. But by the time we got to the 1984 convention and he was renominated, boy, I'll tell you, that the Republican Party was whipped into shape and knew how to put on a show. I was there for that, and things were pretty good. So I imagine this will be a pretty interesting show here with a point to be made about Republicans versus Democrats and the Democratic turn to socialism. I imagine we'll be hearing a lot about that.
All right, Jeffrey, always great hearing your take on things. Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't have his website bookmarked, you need to. TheJeffreyLord.com. That's TheJeffreyLord.com. He has some great stories up on Charlie Kirk and the trial. Also, the huge win at the Supreme Court for the president and his big, beautiful ballroom. You'll be able to check it out there, TheJeffreyLord.com. Jeffrey, good to hear from you, my friend.
Thanks. I'll see you around the block.
All right. Indeed, ladies and gentlemen. All right. We've got to take a break here. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. You know, Dylan, there's something that we don't talk much about on the program, but maybe we ought to. You know, there's a food chain here in the world community, and humans, we should be always at the top of the right. We should be at the top of the pile.
Theoretically, yeah, we should be.
This story coming out of Reno, Nevada has me very worried, very worried. A woman was swimming in Lake Tahoe when she was mauled in the water. Now, you might be thinking this was Lake Tahoe. Was it, I don't know, the Loch Ness Monster? Was it some sort of like bear? No, it was an otter.
Oh.
Like the cute, lovable otters, right? So Lynette Bellin, this is from the New York Post, the writer Chris Branford. Miss Bellin is a swimming instructor. She said that she was swimming in Lake Tahoe when she was savagely attacked by an otter during an open water swim. She recalled she posted all this on Instagram. She recalled how she had to fight off the animal near Hidden Beach, telling CBS News something grabbed my leg and pulled me under. She said it was so powerful, I thought it was a human. Miss Bellin said she'd swum in Lake Tahoe for 25 years, said the otter lunged at her and began biting and scratching. It was just ruthless, she said. Well, this was shocking. I had no idea.
I'm sorry, but when you said that they grabbed her and pulled her under, I just can't imagine a small little otter. I mean, how big is this otter?
Well, this is where it gets interesting. It turns out that otters are considered to be apex predators.
Oh my God.
They're extremely dangerous.
I did not know
that. And you know, you see the cute little otters, and they got the little feet and the little teeth, you know, and the I don't know how they sound.
Yeah, that's sounds like accurate.
Yes.
They look like little cute little dogs.
Right.
Like
you would have them as fluffy little things, you know, like little furry, like you know, the ground beef you buy in the supermarket of the tube.
Yeah.
That's kind of what a little otter looks like.
Literally. You know? With legs.
Cradle them, cuddle them. Rock-a-bye otter.
Yeah.
You give them a name, Ollie the Otter or something like that.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the otters are looking at you like supper. I mean, that's what they are. So otters are very dangerous, and they are a direct danger to humans because of their strong bites. They have very powerful jaws. Here's the thing. They also can transmit diseases like rabies.
Oh, good.
And they've been known to actually, in some instances, the mother otters are the more dangerous. And the mother otters, there are documented incidents of these mother otters knocking over kayaks and chasing boats because they got too close to the little baby otters.
And I would still own one. After all of that, I would still own one.
Oh, gosh.
I could take it.
Unbelievable. It's bad enough we got, what, little midget donkeys running around terrorizing cops in Georgia. Now we got otters on the prowl in Lake Tahoe, for goodness sakes. We'll be right back.
Memphis, Tennessee, on the banks of the mighty Mississippi. It's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
Buenos dias, gringo americanos. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry. Hello, everybody. I was looking at a Taco Bell story, and Forgot what language I was supposed to be speaking. Great to have you with us today. Hello, Americans. Great to have you with us today. Write down our telephone number for this hour of the program, 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. Dylan, I am just bothered by the fact that we have killer otters that are right now prowling the waterways of America looking for unsuspecting humans to devour.
They're mauling women.
This is not good.
What's happening?
No, I mean, look, they got to be Democrats.
They have to be.
Right? I mean, if they're doing that to the women.
Yeah.
Yeah, got to be. Got to be.
I would still own an otter. I don't know what the problem is here. They're small enough for me that I would declaw it.
No, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not. Aren't they the Chippendales over at Chippendale over at Disney World?
Are they otters?
Are they otters or beavers or something?
Chipmunks.
Are they? They all look the same to me.
This is terrible.
Kristen New, what are you laughing at?
It doesn't know the difference between an otter and a chipmunk. Chipmunks are this big, Todd.
not the ones at Disney. These things were big. They're like big furry things.
I know. I was scared of them when I was a kid. Don't touch me.
No, I'm a grown adult. I was trying to enjoy my eggs and bacon, and all of a sudden, I've got a couple of big hairy Chippendales there.
Yeah, yes. No, thank you. No, thank you, Disney.
Well, they announced this. I was at Disneyland, and they said, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, please welcome the Chippendale review. And I'm like, oh my God, am I in a strip club?
They said ladies and gentlemen?
Yeah,
I thought that was against Disney.
No. This was back before
woke Disney. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't even think they say that anymore. I don't know. I think maybe they've gone back to it. But for a while, they did not say ladies and gentlemen.
And I don't know where those paws are. But by the way, we are excited to have Kristen New with us, who is a dear friend. You started the Moms for Liberty chapter.
I did. Jenny Martin and I started Moms for Liberty. That was back during COVID when we were advocating for the rights of our children. So that's how you and I met.
Yeah.
And now we've become friends outside of radio and outside of politics. Although I seem to think we always talk about politics.
That's all we do.
We eat, sleep, and breathe it.
So we're gonna talk politics in just a second. I do want to go to the phones, though. We have Tom in Houston, Texas. First of all, Tom, how's that? Are you guys getting the tropical storm? Is that already passed you guys by?
Well, it brushed off to the east. It hit at the Texas-Louisiana line in Sabine Pass.
Okay.
And it got Beaumont and the good, beautiful woods of East Texas as it proceeded, let's say, towards Waco, if you can follow the track I'm talking about.
I'm following the track. We'll check in with Chip and Joanna Gaines. Hope they're doing well.
Well, okay.
Anyway, all right, what's going on, Tom? I'm glad you're okay. What do you want to talk about?
Well, you have the story about the Pledge of Allegiance hating woman that you found out there.
Yes, from Georgia, yes. She finds the Pledge of Allegiance offensive, Tom.
And I've always said this, and I ask people to join with me. At the end of the Pledge of Allegiance, I add the line, those who will fight for it. Because freedom ain't free, and we can see what a mere 40 years of piss-poor American, what's the word I'm looking for, attitudes have brought us. And before I go, I do want to say this. I know you were a big part of the Rush Limbaugh show, and I think we need to resurrect a saying from Rush's honor and put it on your shoulders. When I come on the line, I'm going to start saying ditto.
Well, and you wow. Know
I mean that as an honor upon you. You do a great show. I want you to come down to Houston, and I'm going to take you out and show you what real barbecue tastes like. And I think the opportunity here with we're having the mid-cycle convention. Come on down with two or three of your massive 500-600 staff members, and we can have a party.
Hey, I love that idea, Tom. That's a deal, and I appreciate you saying that. What an honor. So I'll just throw in my mega dittos. I'm going to trump your ditto with my mega ditto. How's that?
Okay, well.
All right, my friend.
If we could bring Russ back.
I know. Tom, look, thank you for calling in, and it's a good thought you had. And Dylan, we may have to go down. We may have to make a road trip to Houston again.
Yeah, but I'm not buying the barbecue thing at all.
Sorry. No, I'm not. It's brisket. It's brisket.
That's can have brisket. I'm fine with that.
Barbecue is, yeah.
Pig. We have barbecue.
Yeah, it's pork. A pork. Kristen New, we have several things to talk about. You are making a lot of noise on social media over a post you wrote, but we're also going to talk about cheerleading, and so we may have to keep you over from the break because we got to talk about these NFL male cheerleaders. And I know you may have some thoughts about that. Maybe. And if you don't, I'm going to give you some thoughts.
No, I have some thoughts. I have all kinds of thoughts about it.
But first, we've got to talk about this post you wrote about your local Republican Party, which you are a member of the grassroots, which were kind of, unceremoniously shoved aside here. And there's really no polite way to say this, but locally, Republicans got their butts handed to them.
We did. You know, I actually hold a vote in the party. I'm the District 83 representative of the party that covers Germantown, a little sliver of Cordova, some of that area, East Memphis. And so I am part of the Republican Party, but like you said, I was the grassroots faction of the party. And so there's another girl that we call ourselves the Kristens here, and we are the conservative housewives.
The real housewives of Germantown.
Yes, the housewives of Germantown. So we are actually got a mention in your book, which I'm so excited about. So everybody go buy that book just so you can read this chapter.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yes, y'all are in my book.
You're in the book. So it's so
exciting. The real housewives.
But yeah, so what we're doing in the Republican Party and what we tried to do is that we took over the party a couple of years ago during Revive 25 is what we called it. It was the year 2025. Mm. And we built this outreach committee. And this outreach committee had the idea, this crazy idea, that we're not going to ask people to come to us and do these, these meet and greets and these little house parties. We're actually going to go to the people. So we started setting up tents in at festivals. We started you were at one of the sign waving events. We literally stood on the side of the road and invited people to come over.
I'm just going to say this, Dylan. Kristen won't admit to this, but I showed a little bit of ankle, and I tell you,
Todd got more people to honk than any of us did. I
got good looking ankles. I'm just saying.
I don't know. Maybe
stinks away.
But we do have fun, and that was the whole purpose.
Yeah,
because politics
has
gotten gross. It has gotten swampy, disgusting. We wanted to get back to the good old handshaking, kissing babies, politicking way of the South. And that is what we wanted to get back into. But we were pushed aside. And we were told by the elite establishment that we don't want to do that because we don't want these Walmart people in our party. We want only the people who are willing to write big checks. But what they don't understand is that I would actually rather have those people because you know who votes? Those people. They may can only write you a $5 check and that's fine and I'll take their $5, but I don't really need their $5. What I need is their vote.
Mm.
And so that's where the Republican Party was missing. We had a debrief last night. And so that debrief, the leaders, the executive board, I thought they were going to go in there and tell us, exactly what it is that we need to do to fix the fact that we got our butts handed to us here in Shelby County. It was the worst turnout of a primary that we've ever had. But instead, they blamed the voters. They blamed apathy. They blamed the candidates for not running good campaigns. They blamed everybody but themselves. And I had to sit there and listen to that for an hour. So I went on Facebook and I talked about it because leaders don't blame other people.
Yeah.
Leaders say, we dropped the ball. They had a room full of people last night willing to help fix it. Willing to say, okay, we're good. We know the ball was dropped. What can we do? And that didn't happen.
It's really shocking to me because I do remember when you guys were leading the charge, and hundreds of people were coming by your tents and the displays. Mm-hmm. They were getting Trump gear, all this kind of stuff. And I just as you guys were as I was reading what you wrote. On social media, I kept thinking to myself, I've heard this story over and over and over and over again from all over the country.
Yes.
Where it seems like this is what's happening in the Memphis area is really a microcosm of what's happening nationwide with the Republican Party right now.
People are feeling homeless. They don't have a party now because the Republican Party is kind of like the new Democrat Party. It's the party of the elites. It's the party of you don't belong here. And then the Democrats, of course, have gone off the deep end. I don't even know where they're at. They're on another planet. So then you have a lot of people like me who don't feel like they identify with the elitist part of the party, that the private clubs, the $300 plate dinners, that kind of stuff. We don't identify with that, but we don't have anybody that is really talking to us, the everyday person. So we don't feel a part of anything. And then we don't vote. We're not going out to the primaries because the Republicans, they control the ballot so tightly that they actually choose who goes on the ballot before you even get to the polls. And that's why you're really not allowed to primary their chosen people. And in Shelby County, we had an election where we had only one person on the ballot for a position, or we had nobody. That does not create a sense of urgency for the voters to show up at the polls.
I know just in the Tennessee, and the, you know, they redistricted, they redrew their condition. Did they blame that?
They did. Okay. They blamed everything but themselves on why people did not show up at the polls. But I am listening to the people. People are calling me. Candidates are calling me. Candidates are saying, we're not getting help from our party. We feel like we're on an island. We were told we were going to have an army of volunteers, is the quote, but they got nothing.
Yeah.
They got nothing.
It's unfortunate, but I mean, the results speak for themselves.
Yes. And so when I go out there and I was campaigning for our Republican sheriff, Brad Less, we went out to a place called ATOP. It's an Anointed Temple of Praise. It's a predominantly black church in a black area, all Democrat. And I had five or six candidates. They don't know who I am. They had five or six candidates bum rush me to try to give me their literature because they're all running for the same position. They're fighting like the third monkey trying to get on the ark here, because that creates an urgency and they are motivated. They are driving their people to the polls. They are organized and they're winning.
Yeah. And they are winning. What concerns me about that, the newly redrawn districts that favor Republicans, is that there were, if the election had been held, if that had been the actual election instead of the primary, Justin Pearson would have won because he pulled in huge votes. So overall, Republicans outvoted by about 20,000. The question is, are those Republicans going to be motivated to get out and vote in November? Because the Democrats are. They're going to get out their votes.
I'm scared. And there's a disconnect. And I don't know how to connect that, but through some really hard work and messaging, we have to change our messaging. People are not getting it. They're not saying, yeah, I really want to go vote for these Republicans. They're seeing them as a bunch of rhinos who aren't doing what they're supposed to do once they get elected.
So I think we've identified the problem here. We got to talk about solutions. I want to do this right after the break, though.
Sure.
901-260-5926 if you'd like to join the conversation with Kristen New. You can follow her on social media. Kristen New for Germantown is her Facebook handle. Kristen New, that's Kristen with an I, Kristen New for Germantown. 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, we've got to give you a title. Conservative show goddess or something.
Ooh, Kristen New. Yeah.
Mary Walters, the queen of talk radio. So Mary.
Vegas-y, you know.
Kristen New joining us. Follow Kristen on social media. Kristen New for Germantown. Kristen, we've got John calling in from Georgia, WDUN, wants to talk about the Republican Party. John, you're on the air with Kristen. What's going on? What's on your mind?
Hey, Todd. I'm a 20-year veteran. Retired, and I hate to say it, but I think the Republican Party is basically dead, and our republic that I love so much, I fear, is circling the drain as we speak. I mean, our kids are brainwashed in these public schools. That's why all this socialist stuff's going on, because that's what they're taught in school, and it's just... It's very disturbing. And also, I wanted to tell you that I saw a video the other day. I've always been a little upset about all the signs being in English and Spanish. But I saw a video in Dearborn, Michigan, of the Home Depot, and the signs were in English and Arabic.
Yes, sir. And, John, you better buckle up because more of that is coming. I guarantee it. John, thank you for your service. I want to bring Kristen in here and get you to weigh in on this. I can understand why he feels that way, but I still think this is all salvageable. What about you? What do we need to do to turn the ship around?
So this is the thing, is that I think the pendulum is going to swing the other way when people just start getting absolutely fed up to the point where changes are going to be forced upon these people. But I don't know if people are there yet, Todd. I mean, people that I talked to were there, but the majority of people are just kind of still had their blinders on. Mm. They're just kind of going through their everyday life. They like to get on social media and whine about stuff. But what are you doing as a citizen to hold your leadership accountable? Because don't forget, they work for you. You are their boss. And I think we as the community and the citizens have forgotten that, and therefore they have taken advantage of that. And they seem to think that they overlord over us, when it's actually the opposite way around. So
I wonder if just stop giving money to the local party and give it to your candidate instead.
You can do that. And that's the thing. The local party, we really don't know how they use these funds. You give all this money, but do you get an itemized statement of how they're using your funds? I don't. I don't know what they're using it for. All I see is that they're going to statesmen's dinners for $300 a pop using your funds. I see that they're throwing parties for their chosen candidates using your funds. But these aren't driving out voters. They're doing their paparazzi show, is what I call it. They like taking their pictures. They like putting their social media posts up. But not one of those efforts is driving not even current voters, but also you have to create new voters. And if you're not creating new voters, your current GOP, let's face it, they're the older boomers. Okay? They're not going to be around forever. You have to create new voters. The Democrat Party is creating new voters by brainwashing him, like he said.
Yeah. No doubt about it. And that was a big part of writing the Golden Age, was to, again, identify the great successes of the Trump administration, but also to remind people we've got a long fight ahead of us, mm-hmm. and we've got to make sure we're raising up a generation of patriots. Kristen, can you stick around?
I can.
Okay, we've got to take a break here, and I do want to get you to weigh in on the big NFL controversy, and we're also taking your calls as well. What is the solution here, ladies and gentlemen, to fixing what is broken with the Republicans? 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. Hey, head over to ToddStearns.com. Download our podcast. Get our newsletter free of charge. Great resources for you there. ToddStearns.com. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Great to have you with us today. Our telephone number, 901-260-5926. And we are honored to have Kristen New with us. Kristen New for Germantown is her Facebook page. Really stirring up a lot of conversation on social media with her take on Republican politics from a local perspective. But honestly, as I was reading this, I'm thinking this could be any Republican Party in the entire country. You know, honestly, Kristen, at the end of the day, and my philosophy has always been this, once the primaries are over, you get behind the candidates and you get them elected. I mean, that's, you know, part of being a Republican is, you know, sometimes you're going to have conservative candidates, sometimes maybe not so conservative. But like in Texas right now with Ken Paxton, for John Thune and Senate leadership to basically turn their back on this guy, that to me shows that you're the ones that are not loyal.
Look, Thune has so many problems right now. I don't know if he needs to create any more for himself. This is ridiculous. The Republican Party, and here's the thing, and here's why, even when we get to past the primaries and why they're still having problems, is because of what I said earlier. They are pre-picking their candidates, and it's probably not the candidates that people want. When people see that you have some skeletons in your closet, you're not exactly a conservative person in your everyday life, they have a little bit of problem with that when you try to preach conservatism to them. So that's when I say that you've got to let people run and let the people decide who they want to be their leader. The Republican Party is not over the people. They have got to understand that. The Democrats need to understand this too. The people are head of the party.
All right. Hang tight there for just a second. We do have some breaking news to share with you.
Breaking news now on the Todd Starn Show.
All right, this coming in from Massachusetts. We've been following the Lindsey Clancy jury. Have you been following that?
Oh,
crazy?
What a train wreck.
It's becoming even more of a train wreck. So the jury came back, sent a note to the judge just a little while ago saying they are still deadlocked. The judge is now reading what they're calling a Tui Rodriguez charge. And basically said, you got to go back and you got to deliberate some more. And here's what that charge entails. The judge reading this in the courtroom: a jury verdict is the principal way facts are decided in a criminal case. Absolute certainty cannot be expected. Each juror's vote must reflect their own convictions, not mere agreement with the majority. Jurors should listen with an open mind and give proper respect to other opinions. There is no reason to think another jury would be more intelligent, impartial, or competent, or that better evidence would appear. So
you probably don't know the answer to this, but how many times can a judge send a jury back before they declare it a hung jury?
Yeah, I think this is probably it. After this, it's got to be.
I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know if somebody might know the answer.
So over, what is it, 9 women on the jury panel? I'm just wondering, they sent them home over the weekend, Kristen, and they were exposed to all of the women in the pink shirts yelling,
Why did they not sequester this jury?
Good question.
This is a high-profile case. I think y'all can disagree with me, but I think if you had 9 men on that jury, I think they would have already come back with a decision.
Well, there was, we played some audio earlier in the week where they asked guys and men and women what they thought about Lindsey Clancy. Cut number 20, please.
The jury is deliberating on a verdict for Lindsey Clancy, and so we are asking people today whether or not they think that she's innocent or guilty.
I think she's innocent. I think if she was guilty, I think it needs to be a state of psychosis. She does not deserve prison time. Based on all the evidence I've seen, the time stamps just doesn't add up to... I don't think she had enough time to kill all 3 kids and harm herself.
Guilty. Sorry, I said it.
I think she's guilty, but I do think there's a lot of, gray area. And I don't know, her husband seems sus to me.
I think she should be found guilty. From the little bit of research that I have done, I think her diagnosis, she said, I think it was a mental issue she was trying to blame it on. I don't agree.
She's guilty of the murdering part of it, but I do think that there's a lot of underlying mental health issues and, women's health issues that need to be talked about with that trial.
Whether or not she did it from a state of sanity, she killed her kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she shouldn't be walking free, probably.
Lindsey Clancy trial, have you guys been following it?
My girlfriend has. No. I know nothing about it, but she's on TikTok for 3 hours in the morning.
What does your girlfriend say about it?
She thinks she's innocent.
What do you think?
I don't know enough about it. I just know what she says.
I wish I knew something about it.
The guilty party is the medical system that failed both her and the children.
Hey, who is that?
She's on trial right now for strangling her 3 kids to death.
Wait, is this the lady who had postpartum?
I hope that Lindsey Clancy not only gets strapped to an electric chair, but that they lethally inject her 3 different times. And here's the crazy part about the Clancy trial. Wow. I could go on for days in this. 2 things. Number one, if you think that men are holding women to too high of standards and your poster child is Lindsey Clancy, how low do you want the standard to be? The only thing we're asking she refrained from doing is killing the kids when her husband goes out to get her Midol. Is that too much to ask for? Is that a Leviathan lift for you? Please don't kill the kids while we're out getting bananas. And number two, you can't have it both ways, okay? The same women that are standing outside of the courthouse railing on and on about how her husband should have intervened and taken control of her medications and, God forbid, involuntarily had her committed and separated from her children, would have been the same women who, if he had done that, would have said Handmaid's Tale.
Do you feel like men's response to this trial has been...
Man, you got to end on that one.
We're good.
That was incredible.
But to your point, all the men said guilty.
That's what I think. I said all the men because they are decision. They just see things black and white. Women are kind of like... We're emotional. We're like, well, dude, she killed her kids. I mean, my goodness, how, what are you going to do about that? Now you're going to let her off after she murdered her children and say, well, maybe she had a reason?
Yeah. And that's the argument here, which is just, it's mind blowing. But again, those hundreds of women, oh, by the way, there was a woman, we've got this audio. So a woman got arrested. She's facing big time problems. Her name is Dawn Light. Is that a dishwashing detergent?
Thanks,
is that
Mom?
Dawn Light, 56 years old, and she was arrested for intimidating Lindsey Clancy murder trial jurors. Take a listen to Cut 40.
To protect the sanctity of the judicial system, these jurors, there was a court order by Judge Sullivan in which there was a supplemental order regarding protocol for media coverage of you. Essentially, according to Judge Sullivan and Rule 119.2b, the court prohibits the filming or photographing of any juror at any time, including during court proceedings, and court-conducted view. No person shall contact, follow, interview, or communicate in any way with a juror prior to the discharge of the jury, or otherwise harass or tamper with a juror before, during, or after the view. Although she states that she was looking
for... All right, so we apologize for that glitchy feed there, but that was our very first look at 56-year-old Dawn Light. In the state of Massachusetts, Dana, clearly not messing around here. She is facing one charge, felony charge of jury intimidation. You heard the prosecutor mentioning that not only was she taking pictures, she was videoing these jurors. She went into a restricted area. She entered a plea of not guilty, we are told. And just to show how serious this is, she's facing potentially up to 20 years in prison because the Lindsey Clancy case involves a potential life sentence. That potentially increases the penalties in this case. So that woman is in a whole lot of legal hot water right now.
You know, do they not know that Lindsey Clancy doesn't know them?
Yeah.
Like they don't know. She doesn't know you. Why are you spending your life and putting yourself in that situation to defend her?
I mean, these are, and I mean no disrespect here. I've got a whole chapter on them in the book called The Gals of Girth. I mean, these are obese, morbidly obese women who have, you know, multicolored hair, the nose rings, and they scream at the moon at night to work out their man-hating aggression. So these are not right-thinking women here. That are doing all of this.
I do think we should have a conversation about the mental health drugs. I mean, she was on like copious amounts of drugs from different doctors. We can have that conversation.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, if she murdered her children, she needs to have consequences.
And again, and I have great sympathy about that. However, she knew, because she went out seeking help, she knew she had these feelings wanting to kill her children. Mm-hmm. So if she's not getting the help she needs, did she at least not have the responsibility, the personal responsibility, to separate herself from her kids so she wouldn't kill them? And she didn't do that.
You know, we're all about personal responsibility today. I feel like that's the theme of our show, like personal responsibility. Mm-hmm. Just own it and say, I got to fix it.
So you, in addition to being a great mom, you've got two boys.
I've got two boys.
All right.
Both in college.
And they're in college. And you coach, and mm-hmm. you also, when you were in college, you were like, what is it, a member of the Pom Squad?
The Memphis Pom Squad.
The Memphis
University
Pom Squad.
University of Memphis Pom Pom Squad.
All right, so what did you ladies do out there on the court?
So we were the dance team. So it's difference between Pom and Cheer. Cheer has the guys, and they do the pyramids and the tumbling. The dance girls are more like, you know, the Laker girls or something like that. They go out in the halftime of the basketball, and they do the halftime shows. That's what we did. But we also competed at a national level, and I won my junior year. I won the 10th national championship for the school. I think they're up to like 17 now national championships.
What was the – Dylan, what was the – there's a Netflix show. Was it Netflix or HBO on the L.A. Lakers? Oh, what was the name of that?
Well, there's a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader one too about the tryouts and how – rigorous it is. And so when we're talking about NFL, I think this is where you're going with this.
It was Winning Time, the Rise of it was HBO. Winning mm-hmm. Time, the Rise of the Lakers Dynasty. And what was interesting on the Lakers girls, they were wanting, like, so when the new owner came in, Jerry Buss, mm-hmm. he really wanted it to be as exotic as could be. And, you know, at the time, I think they just had cheerleaders.
They were pushing
with,
the envelope.
Yeah.
They were.
So they brought in Paula Abdul.
They did.
She was the first Laker
girl.
She
was amazing. And there was this kind of like, you're half model, half athlete, and all entertainer. Like, that is your thing.
So, and then, like, for the cheerleaders, so there have been male cheerleaders for, well, going all the way back to, you know, whenever, whenever Harvard was around. Mm-hmm. So the male cheerleaders were pretty well-built guys because they were doing either gymnastics themselves or they were hoisting the girls up in the air.
Yes, they were your brute. They were your strength. And they were really strong guys. I have seen a male cheerleader hold one girl in each hand all the way up in a full extension.
So they weren't doing jazz hands
and
gyrating their private parts.
Absolutely not.
Because that's what's going on now with the big story is that, you had the Patriots.
The Eagles.
And the Eagles, who have four male cheerleaders, and these guys are
they're pom-pom girls. They're more like pom-pom girls. They have the big palms, and they are doing the little palm routines, the sexy kind of palm routines. They're out there. And nobody asked for this, Todd. Not one person said.
Now, I'm wondering, is that like a big thing?
No, it is not a big thing. Now, in dance, I will say, in the world of college dance, it has gone more towards mixed-sexed dancing because the guys are super good at dancing. But you got to think about more like Justin Timberlake dancing, Usher dancing, okay, that kind of dancing. We're not talking about what the NFL is doing. That is recent. That is recent, even with college. Even college is going towards that, where they're putting guys in the routines, the palm routines, with the pom-poms in their hands. Now, I'm not saying these guys are terrible dancers. These guys are fantastic dancers. Some of these, now, I don't know about the guys on the NFL, but the guys at the college level are fantastic dancers.
But
nobody asked for that.
Dylan, you're a big football guy. I mean, is that what, were you sitting around talking to the missus? And saying, you know, we really need some guys gyrating on the sidelines here, honey.
Yeah, I can't say I've mentioned that. Also, the cheerleaders in general, I'm not allowed to look at. I mean, I'm married.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
So if it was a guy, maybe I'd actually be able to look at him, but I don't want to.
In college, they're actually using the guys to win national championships because that's what they're about. But the NFL is different. They're not out there winning national championships. They're out there to entertain the crowd and to be the entertainment for men. Let's be honest. That is who's buying the tickets and watching the NFL and watching those girls out there dancing. It's like the girls at the wrestling tournaments that hold up the cards.
Lovely ladies.
We don't, you know, Price is Right started. I blame Price is Right. They started this. They had the Barker's Beauties.
Yeah, Barker's Beauties.
But now they have guys.
Wait, what?
Yes,
oh,
Price is Right.
Yeah, that's not right.
Doing the jazz hands when they're presenting the car.
No, they can't be doing that.
They are.
And the next thing you know.
They are, Todd.
I mean, do you really want some guy in a Speedo, you know, displaying a refrigerator, a Frigidaire?
Well,
is that still a thing?
Depends on who you ask, I guess.
Well, then again.
I'm going to say no. And I'm a woman, and I'm going to say no. I do not want to see that.
Oh, my gosh. All right, Krista Dew, stick around. We've only got a few minutes left. We do have to take a quick break, though. Ladies of the Todd Stearns Listening Show audience, do you want to see men on The Price is Right in their Speedos? Selling you Rice-A-Roni. 901-260-5926. It is the San Francisco treat. We'll be right back. All right. It's a weird show. We've been talking about Republican politics and carnivorous beavers and
male cheerleading pom-pom girls.
Gyrating guys.
Speedo wearers.
You know, it is interesting. There is one cheerleading squad in the NFL that has not had male cheerleaders. That is the Dallas Cowboys.
If the Dallas Cowboys ever gets a male cheerleader out there in chaps, it is the end of the world as we know it. You guys might want to get right with God. Because it is coming.
Yeah, they're not. I don't think the Dallas Cowboys organization.
They better not, Todd. They better not.
I'm just shocked the Eagles. I mean, you know, they have like one of the most brutal fan bases in the country. I mean, they booed Santa Claus.
Do you think the Steelers would ever do that? You know, like
Green Bay.
Or Green Bay. They're gritty.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you think their fan base would accept that?
I don't know. Dylan, what do you think?
I think the 49ers would have been the first one.
I agree with Dylan.
Really surprised.
Really surprised.
I think the Eagles fans are going to tear this guy apart. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
He can't make it out there. I mean, he's
has. Already getting, yeah.
But I kind of feel bad for him. He's like, this is his pinnacle of his career, probably.
I mean, he's having a good time out there.
I'm glad. I'm happy for him. I'm just not going to watch him.
No, but I mean, and who's
you can't help it. You can't. It's like right there.
He's on the camera.
They force you to watch it.
Yeah,
Dylan.
What gets me are the fans that are there. I mean, those are not very cheap seats, you know, and they literally have a front row view of all of this.
You know, he's entertainment, but for the wrong reasons.
Mm.
They're out there. They're making fun of this guy.
Well, I'm wondering what the female cheerleaders think about, you know, having these guys on the team.
That's a good question. And did he replace a girl?
Oh, there. Well, I mean, the argument could be made.
If they only
guys,
have a budget and they can only pay, let's say, 12 cheerleaders.
It's true.
Did he replace a girl?
But can we talk about the, and again, the outfits are the outfits, but the onesie, I'm not sure that's a good look.
Or the rhinestones. You don't want to see, I mean, he's not Elvis. Only Elvis can get away with that.
We had a caller yesterday who said, get ready. And this is true. I never really thought about this, but he said, the next step is drag queen cheerleaders.
Okay. Are we going back to The Longest Yard? Have y'all seen that movie with Adam Sandler? God. And they have the prisoners and they're the cheerleaders?
Yeah.
Yeah, that.
It's an all-male prison. We'll just leave it at that. Kids, Google it.
I'm sorry. Moms, if you have your kids in the car, I am so sorry.
Dylan, I still feel bad for it. I was telling Dylan about The Replacements, and I'm like, Dylan, Google this, like, sexy cheerleader scene from The Replacements.
It's the best. It's the tryout scene. It's the tryout scene.
Should I explain to my wife why I Googled sexy cheerleader scene? But it's great. It's funny.
It's hilarious. She has to go to the local gentleman's club to get her new cheerleading team.
It is a great movie.
Although I don't really know why. There are no other girls available.
Apparently not in Baltimore or wherever that was. All right. No offense, WCBM. Kristen New, great to see you.
We're going to
bring you back in for another show. Ladies and gentlemen, a lot of fun. ToddStearns.com. Go check it out. Lots of great content for you there. Get out there, be good, America, drink some sweet tea. It's hot out there.